This is UN in Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Jocelyn Sambira. In this week's program, UN peacekeepers provide a sense of security in South Sudan refugee settlements, and migrant workers are sending more money home than a decade ago. But first, as harrowing reports mount of violence and killings across the Kasai provinces of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC, the head of the UN military operation there says peacekeepers are doing their level best to protect civilian lives. The UN Stabilization Mission MONUSCO's force commander, Derek Mbuyiselo Ngwebi, said that part of the challenge is that formerly peaceful areas have erupted into violence, with an array of armed groups leading to a highly complex situation on the ground, with fresh claims of sexual abuse and exploitation by peacekeepers this year in the DRC. He said strict procedures and training were now in place to emphasize the UN zero tolerance policy. Aditya Mehta asked Commander Mbuyiselo Ngwebi what MONUSCO was doing to protect civilians in the Kasais and elsewhere in the DRC.
The situation is very serious. Children going to school, it's not happening. Health centers not working. Government is trying their level best. But also from MONUSCO's side, you'd remember that there was no, at least a presence of MONUSCO, both military and civilians. But presently, an office has been created in Kananga with a complement of about 70, at least a civilian component, people. From the first side, initially we had two companies from Pakistan deployed in Kananga. Presently, we've added another company, and by mid-July, we'll be having another company coming from Ghana, which will be in Chikapa. That covers relatively the Kasais. And of course, the whole idea is just to make sure that there is a conducive environment for the local people to go back to their own villages.
Could you describe how MONUSCO is undertaking its protection of civilian mandate in the Kasais?
From the SRSG and the Polgal office, and of course the human rights, there is an issue of good offices trying to work with government and role players at national level, at provincial level, and of course at local level, linking up with the national police. And of course from the MONUSCO force, we are working very closely with the generals of the armed forces of the DRC. It's quite a challenge in the sense that some of the areas where this violence is erupting, they've been quiet in the past. So this is a new development. And of course, taking other dynamics in Katanga and latest development in Beni in terms of the new coalition of the Mai Mais and beginning to challenge government institutions, especially the security forces, that is becoming more complex than we thought we could at least manage. But we are at least doing our level best.
The UN does take sexual exploitation and abuse by its peacekeepers very seriously. In your position as force commander of MONUSCO, what are you doing to end this scourge?
Well, from the induction program, we make sure that we cover the issue of sexual exploitation and abuse and confirm that from their own training and from their own countries, at least something has been done in making sure that they are aware of the challenge of sexual exploitation and abuse and the stand of the UN, especially the Secretary General, in terms of zero tolerance. As a force commander, we also at least have got a directive which speaks to what is expected, and also we've declared certain areas out of bounds to soldiers, and we've appointed focal points per contingent to make sure that at least this issue is addressed.
Peacekeepers from the UN mission in South Sudan, UNMISS, are helping to provide a much-needed sense of security to displaced people in a small town in the north of the country. Unlike many displaced communities in other parts of South Sudan, these people are not fleeing the conflict which has troubled Africa's newest nation for over 3 years. Instead, they are refugees who have fled across the border from Sudan, just 30 kilometers to the north. Daniel Dickinson reports from the town of Bunj.
Almost 140,000 refugees fleeing violence have found sanctuary in the small town of Bunj, overwhelming its population of just 20,000. The refugees are living in four open areas or camps. And as Andreas Fiadome of the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, explains, their presence has led to some tension.
As you can see, Bunj is a small town with very limited resources such as water, health facilities, education facilities, not adequate for the host community. And then with the refugees, this creates a bit of conflict between them, whilst the host community perceive the refugees as intruding or competing for the same limited natural resources.
The refugees started arriving from Sudan from 2012 onwards, following the outbreak of conflict between armed forces of the government of Sudan and the rebel group, the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North, or SPLMN. A 150-strong UN peacekeeping contingent, mainly from Rwanda, operates from a small base in Bunj, patrolling the roads. They provide a secure environment for the local community, refugees and humanitarian workers, a job for which the head of UNMISS, David Shearer, thanked them when he visited Bunj recently. The area has also witnessed sporadic fighting between South Sudanese government forces and opposition fighters known as the SPLA-IO. This has led to greater insecurity and instability in the region. Mr. Shearer said the peacekeepers provide an important protective presence and contribute to peacemaking efforts.
It's a crossroads for a lot of different conflicts that are happening, and that makes it very volatile, and it's also therefore makes it very important that we have our presence here and that they are able to provide some confidence to the humanitarian agencies that are working.
UNHCR's Andreas Fiadome said a joint peace council has been formed by the agency and local authorities to encourage refugees and the host community to work together. Daniel Dickinson in Bunj, in the far north of South Sudan.
The amount of money migrants send home to their families in developing countries has increased by 51% over the past decade, lifting millions out of poverty, a new report by the International Fund for Agricultural Development, IFAD, has found. IFAD President Gilbert F. Hungbo, who grew up in a rural village in the West African nation of Togo, said that more than 200 million migrant workers are now supporting an estimated 800 million family members globally. I asked him to explain the impact these remittances are having on people, households, and surrounding communities.
We don't see this as just the billion that's been flowing to the receiving country, but it's about billion of lives that's been saved. We talk about 200 million migrant workers that are sending money home. This year is expected to be a 450 billion. We have at least 100 countries that each will receive at least $100 million. And in a lot of countries, it's even higher than the ODA the country will be receiving, is even higher than the foreign investment. Those transfers that maybe is $200 or $100 or $300, it represents what? Maybe 15% of the salary that those migrants are earning in the host countries. That 15% helps a lot of the families, either from the health perspective, children education, and so forth.
Is IFAD already thinking of how to harness the remittances to support agriculture?
Yeah, honestly, we are already working in some countries how the money that has been received is used by what we call the Village Saving and Loan Association. So they can use part of that, saving it, and that also is being lent for productive activity. But this is a domain where we have to include the whole community, making sure that the remittances that have been received is not just used for consumption, but it's also used in productive activity, so to generate more income for the family back home.
You've voiced in the past your passion about helping young people in rural areas. Is that something that you will take forward in your new position?
Clearly, this is one of the key challenge and rather opportunity that I'm advocating for. We at IFAD, the International Fund for Agricultural Development, to focus on, not in the broader sense of youth, but focusing on rural youth in farming and non-farming activity, simply because I do believe that we are and should be part of the solution against what we call the forced economic migration. I do believe that by working on the productivity issues, making agriculture work less, reducing the hardship and providing linkage to local or sub-regional and international markets, and making innovation affordable for the youth and organizing them, I think, and if at providing financing, we should be able to create a conducive environment that will make it much more appealable to the youngster to remain in their community and to develop from the community.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN in Africa. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jocelyn Sambira.